Well, we all know the past few years have been really tough as far as the economy, right? And we're slowly struggling back to, if not normalcy, at least something resembling something a bit less catastrophic than what we've been through. The past few years, though, have really expanded the ranks of the homeless, and a surprising number of people who had homes lost them, along with the resources needed to find somewhere else to live. So this morning on Perspectives, we'll spend the hour with Susan Porchot, Executive Director of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. We'll talk facts and figures, sure, but we'll be more focused on the lives of those who struggle to regain security and dignity. All coming up on Perspectives this morning, right after the news with Ronald J. Evan. Happy Thursday morning to you, and that means it's Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, and I hope that everything is well in your household. But you know, there are far too many people who do not have households to call their own. A surprising number of people and some surprising kinds of people, as we're going to hear this morning, because we are going to be speaking for the hour with Susan Porchot. Back in July of 2009, she became Executive Director of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. And that followed, as you may recall, a nationwide search for a successor to Kay Freeman, the coalition's longtime director. She passed away the previous fall. Susan came to the job from ECHO, the Emergency Care Help Organization, which she headed after leaving the business faculty at Florida State University. And her background includes service on the coalition's board, as well as membership on the Governor's Commission on Homelessness. And now she has a home at Big Bend Homeless Coalition. Good to have you, Susan.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about something you just came out with, and thank you again to Patrick Sheffield, who's been helping us put this together here. The Big Bend Homeless Coalition's 2012 report on homelessness in Leon County. After you took over the executive director's position, I remember you came out with the first one, this snapshot, this point in time look at what's going on with homelessness. And are we doing better, worse? Where are we now?
Well, the actual number of people who are homeless has increased somewhat in this past year. We counted people who are homeless on January 30th, 2012, and we did that just by talking with them, by talking with the agencies that serve people who are homeless, and we found that 738 people were homeless on that one single day in January. It gives you kind of an idea. Compared to last year, the last week in January, when we counted 683. So there's been about an 8% increase in people who are homeless in our community.
Well, I can hear some folks right now say, oh my gosh, look, Leon County, a statistical area of like a quarter of a million people, and you got 600 some homeless. That doesn't seem like a lot.
Well, it's a lot if you are one of those people. If you are a child who is homeless in our community, if you are a person who has lost her job and her apartment or house and seeking a job, being homeless is a very traumatic event in a child's life, in a person's life. And it takes a lot of work to get back into a stable home after you've lost your home.
Where do the homeless come from? We seem to be on a little bit of a travel corridor, if you will, here with I-10 so close. And you do have a migration, particularly among male homeless folks as they kind of travel from place to place, coming from the north, headed south. And a lot of them kind of float through Tallahassee on the way. But are we seeing more of those types of folks, or more women and children? How does that all break out in this snapshot?
Interestingly, most of the people who are homeless in Leon County actually have ties here. They grew up here, went to school here, or they were from somewhere else and they have family here. So we have seen some increase in folks who were in another state and heard that there might be jobs, for instance, in Florida. There might be jobs related to the Gulf Water oil disaster. So we do have some folks coming from outside of town, but most of them come to Tallahassee because they have roots here. Many come expecting to be able to stay with family while they find a job, and then the jobs aren't found, and they are homeless in our community. Many others, especially homeless families with children, have had jobs, education, roots here, and then after having lost their job or after having had some kind of health condition that was expensive and without health care, they find themselves homeless. And those are in the increase. The homeless families with children are increasing in our community, as well as women, single women who are homeless.
Homelessness does not necessarily mean joblessness, though, does it? Can you be homeless and have a job at the same time?
Oh, absolutely. Many of the people that we serve at Hope Community, for instance, are employed. Many of them are also students, and that is mature students, students who are returning to school to get a skill-type job. And one of the things that many people may not think about on a daily basis is that a minimum wage part-time job is not enough to house and feed, say, a three-person family. And so what our clients are looking for are full-time jobs that can help them become self-sufficient and return to stable housing.
Was it Big Bend Homeless Coalition that put together that number that at minimum wage in this area, in the capital city area, one would have to work something like 92 hours a week in order to afford a typical Tallahassee area apartment?
That is true. The rents in our area are somewhat inflated because of the universities and the big student population among rental units. So what we find is that many of our families, both parents are working, and it's still tough to stretch the dollar in order to get an apartment that will house a family.
You're in tune with Perspectives on WFSU-FM, and we're talking with Susan Porcio. She's the executive director of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. Your thoughts, your concerns, your comments, your questions, 414-1234, local 800-926-8809. If it's long distance from you to Tallahassee, and Perspectives at WFSU.org is the email address. You have made reference a couple times already, Susan, about the Hope Community, and that is different than the shelter, which is in downtown Tallahassee. How are the two facilities different, and how are they somewhat similar?
Okay. The shelter on Tennessee Street is a nonprofit agency whose mission is to provide basic services. That is, someone can walk up, a homeless person can walk up and receive a meal and a place to sleep that night. That's called an emergency shelter. So the intention is that a person will go there in the case of an emergency and just need a place to stay and something to eat. They serve hundreds of people every day in providing shelter and food. The Hope Community, which is operated by the Homeless Coalition, a separate nonprofit agency, is our program which provides what we call transitional housing. And what that means is that the folks who come to stay at Hope Community are ready to get out of homelessness, and they have a plan to do so. So what we do is we provide shelter and food and support services for up to 6 months to help people have the stability they need in order to find a job, to find an affordable apartment, to address any issues that they might have, such as domestic violence counseling and so on. And the transitional housing program at Hope Community is very successful. In last month, for instance, 80% of the people that exited our program moved out into stable housing. So 8 out of every 10 people that left that month were able to get out of homelessness.
You go to over to the Hope Community, though, which is right off of Pensacola Street, over on the same street that you find the Leon County Health Department headquarters and the sheriff's office and all that. And it just looks like a typical nice little subdivision. There are houses. Mm-hmm. There's a community center. There's all other sort and a rockin' garden. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. And you see, you know, kids playing and folks sitting out on the porch and doing different things. You know, it doesn't look any different than any other, like, little neighborhood.
Well, that's right, because a big part of our kind of values, our philosophy at the Homeless Coalition is that people who are homeless have the same dignity and worth of any individual. And a lot of what people need when they are homeless is really the support and the stability to be treated as anyone else. And that's what we provide at Hope Community. It is, we take a lot of pride in being a good neighbor to those that are around us. We have a beautiful campus. And the children in particular who are there, for many of them, it's the first really stable place they've stayed in a long time. And one little girl said when they moved in last week, Mommy, can we stay here for a little while? So she was so used to moving around that it was she had a smile on her face that she could really kind of keep her things there and be happy.
That is, we hear from folks who maybe have a military family background, and mm-hmm. and they bounce all over the place as the parents are reassigned to different places, and that could be a little bit problematic, a little bit troublesome. But in the case of homelessness, you're dealing with potentially a much more traumatic kind of thing to bounce kids around, aren't you?
Oh, that's right. There have been studies done on children who have grown up in homelessness and poverty. And it's found that many of them have so much trauma related to uncertainty and unpredictability, losing their things, having to switch schools, all of those things that go with homelessness is extremely traumatic for a child. And one of the things that we do at Hope Community is we offer counseling for the children to give them some sense of stability, to give them a way to talk about their fears and concerns, but also in a very loving environment.
Is there any kind of statistics that show how many children who undergo even a relatively short period of homelessness may perhaps become more predisposed to having those problems that can contribute to their own homelessness down the road? Any idea?
At least poverty. There have been studies of families who are homeless across the nation, and every study shows that a child who has been homeless is less likely to do well in school, more likely to have health problems, and more likely to drop out of school early. So all of those things combined makes a person more likely to be homeless and more likely to not be able to get a good job and to be poor themselves.
So the cycle can go on.
That's right.
And that's what you guys are there to kind of intercept and break that cycle if possible at Hope Community.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Susan Porcio. She is the executive director of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition on Perspectives, 414-1234. If you'd like to give us a call, 800-926-8809, long distance to Tallahassee from wherever you are, in Perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. What's that old saying? Everybody needs a home to go home to. But in too many instances, that isn't the case, particularly with the economic downturn that we have weathered of late. And so we're talking homelessness this morning on Perspectives. 414-1234, the number to call locally from Tallahassee, and it's 800-926-8809 if it's long distance. Brooks County, Georgia isn't too far a distance. That's where Marnie is giving us a call from. Hey, Marnie.
Hello.
How are you?
Oh, beautiful day. If you could bottle it, you'd be richer than Bill Gates.
Absolutely. Well, what can we do for you, Marnie?
I think that the realtors and the banksters, some of them are like whores and gangsters, and young people are in anguish. I see cops and nurses and firefighters in anguish, and these are very conservative, careful with their money, young people, and I think that in a country where there's so much wealth, that homelessness is a disgrace. And I also wanted to say that I hope people in the upper echelons of the power in that have power and clout as to helping homeless people, bear in mind that it's further traumatizing for a mother and her children to have to make chit-chat with filthy, diseased people and people in and out of prison, dangerous, creepy sociopaths.
Thanks, Marnie. We appreciate the input. The situation she was talking about, though, relative to the foreclosure situation of mm-hmm. people actually having their homes taken away, has that had an impact, do you see, Susan, on the incidence of homelessness that you deal with in the coalition?
It absolutely has. One of the things that's interesting about our most recent count, our point-in-time count in January, was that 34% of the people that we talked with were homeless for the very first time. So that kind of is contrary to the stereotype of someone who becomes homeless, stays homeless, and has a certain kind of lifestyle, if you will. That's a stereotype that is shown to be not true according to the interviews and the surveys that we did. There are so many people who have either lost their homes due to foreclosure or have been evicted from apartments due to job loss and lack of income that first-time homeless families and individuals is on the rise.
Well, that brings us, since you mentioned stereotype, to something we had talked about previously before we went on the air. A gentleman of my acquaintance at one time when he had a few moments actually took a homeless gentleman out to lunch. He found him on the off-ramp of I-10, headed up to Monroe Street, and the gentleman was kind of, whoa, this has never happened to me before. And went out to a fast food restaurant nearby, and my friend engaged the gentleman in conversation and found out to his immense surprise the guy on a maybe not a typical day, but sometimes when things were going really well could pull in like a couple $100 from just panhandling. So my friend, that kind of locked the stereotype into his brain. Anytime he talked then after that, his assumption was that all these homeless people you see out panhandling and will work for food and that type of thing actually were doing pretty well for themselves.
Well, one can't deny that there are people standing on the street with those signs. However, for instance, on January 30th, there were 738 people who were homeless in our community. There were, I would guess, 10 people max on the streets panhandling. So to make some assumptions about the other 728 based on those 10 may not really make sense in terms of what does the picture look like of homelessness in general. Now, there are always going to be folks who have been homeless a long time and have resorted to panhandling or other means of getting money so that they can eat and stay in shelter and so on. But more importantly, there are all those people that you don't see. There are hundreds and hundreds of people in our community who are homeless and working and staying in cars and taking their kids to school and just doing everything they can do to survive and be as stable as possible and get out of homelessness.
Well, given that several hundred that you just talked about there, how many folks can you accommodate at Hope Community at any given time?
Hope Community has a capacity of about 140 people. So, for instance, right now, we have about 55 or 60 people in our family dorm, including about 30, 35 children. In our single women's dorm, we have about 30 single women. And in our men's dorm, we have about 60 single men. So, those 140 or so people who stay at Hope Community, they move in for transitioning out into stability. And then as they move out, more people move in to make those changes necessary. So we might see over the course of a year 400 different people who come to Hope Community for help and are able to move out into stability.
Still less than what you had tracked on that point in time snapshot back at the end of January.
Right, right.
So what happens to the rest of them?
Well, interestingly, there are about 15 different social service agencies in our community that offer different housing programs for people who are homeless. We mentioned Hope Community, which our agency operates, the Homeless Coalition. We also have Homefront, which is a 50-unit apartment complex for veterans who have been homeless. We have another program called Home Plate, which is a rental subsidy program for people who have been chronically homeless and have disabilities. In addition to those programs, ECHO operates a housing program, Lutheran Social Services, Good News Outreach. There are just a number of different agencies that try to provide housing and support services to people who are homeless, in addition, of course, to the shelter on Tennessee Street and the Haven of Rest.
But before you can avail yourself of any of those services, you have to, what, hit bottom, get to the point where you go, I can no longer make this on my own to care for myself and my family. I've got to go and ask somebody for help.
That is true, and that it's so difficult, especially for the homeless families, the mom or the dad who have always been the supporter of the family, the caregiver, and to be able to go into a place and say, I need help, I need somewhere for me and my kids to stay, that's a very difficult thing, and that's one of the important things about social service agencies in our community, excuse me, many of us just spend so much time trying to be open to people from wherever they are, knowing that we've all made mistakes in our past. I've done a bad job sometimes managing money. I know how difficult it is to keep a family housed and fed and so on. And so many people just need a place to be kind of, if you will, supported, somebody to help them feel like they can get back on their feet. And that's what we try to do at the Homeless Coalition.
And speaking of families, by the way, I understand you had a couple of happy birthdays in your household of late.
That's right. Both of my children had birthdays this week, May 12th and May 15th.
I know, just a couple of days before. How'd you do that?
Well, I was in the academic world then, and they were end of semester babies.
Oh, my gosh. That makes perfect sense.
I try to plan.
Well, in planning for the future of the Hope Community and its continuing collaboration with all of these other agencies and organizations, Susan, how do you see this playing out, particularly since money is getting tighter and tighter for the nonprofits in this area, and local government can't, and certainly state government can't ride to the rescue like they used to?
That's right. In fact, the homeless housing funding was cut from the state budget this year in the legislature. So those dollars are virtually non-existent for the coming year. What that means is that the social service agencies like ours, the Homeless Coalition, will be doing as much as we can to reach out to our community for support, our local community, our churches, people of goodwill, people who can relate to situations where times are tough. One of the things that we know at the Homeless Coalition is that we're going to be facing a tough year this coming year in terms of funding. So we would request that those who are listening just think a minute about what you and your household might be able to do to help out.
What kind of help do you need? I mean, you think of things like, you know, blankets and canned goods and that sort of thing, but what mm-hmm. what else?
Well, a variety of things. Our agency in particular always needs linens because we essentially operate a 140-unit motel, if you will, transitional housing program. So we go through linens a lot. But I'd also like to say that we always, excuse me, need volunteers.
Okay. Well, while we're also on the subject there of individual philanthropy, helping out organizations like Hope Community, you've also had some real white knights in the form of local businesses mm-hmm. who have ridden in to help out with things. Well, like the aforementioned garden/playground that you
right.
have out there
mm-hmm.
now. So that's also something that companies could do, is maybe make the Hope Community one of the recipients of their beneficence, huh?
Absolutely. We have many community supporters. Zonta Club comes out to our Hope Community to do financial literacy classes. The Garden Club has helped build a playground and gardens for the children. We have a number of different groups who do a lot of hands-on work at Hope Community. And businesses, absolutely, it's a wonderful place to do a kind of team-building exercise, if you will, painting or cooking or just playing with the kids, any kind of activity. And I might also mention that much of what we do is done by professional case managers, and counselors, and of course, funding for just the operations of a program like ours is always helpful.
The Big Bend Homeless Coalition, Susan Porcheau is our guest here on Perspectives this morning. 414-1234, 800-926-8809, and perspectives@wfsu.org is the email address. Talk about the front end here. We discussed the families, the situations where an economic crisis can throw even a moderately affluent family into a homeless situation mm-hmm. at times when coupled with things like the foreclosure crisis and just the general economic downturn. But when it comes to some of the, again, gentlemen, the more stereotypical homeless folks, the guys who – and usually it's guys who stand up by the street corners and panhandle and that sort of thing. How often are situations like substance abuse and mental health issues impacting that mm-hmm. situation, Susan?
Chronic substance abuse and mental health issues are a significant factor in especially those who are chronically homeless, people who have been homeless more than a year. One of the things that we've found, though, at the Homeless Coalition is that folks, once they are in a stable living environment, are much more likely to access and take advantage of services such as substance abuse counseling or mental health counseling. So we have a program called Home Plate, which actually helps people who are chronically homeless and have some type of disability or issue move into an apartment. And once they're kind of stably living, they are they have kind of loosed themselves from the where will I sleep, where will I eat, where will I get a dollar for a bus, that sort of questioning every day, and they're able to address the kind of underlying issues. Now, this is counter to a lot of the kind of traditional wisdom, which is that people need to go through counseling or substance abuse treatment and do that before they get into housing. But studies nationally have shown that, in fact, a model called the housing first model really works better. That is, get someone into housing that is livable and stable and safe, and then provide the services that they need to stay in that housing. It's very successful. 95% of the people that we have housed in that home plate program stay in the housing. They do not return to homelessness.
That's remarkable because counterintuitive, as you said, that the perception that, well, this individual screwed up their life usually through making bad choices, and so if we take those bad choices away, then they'll straighten up and fly right. And you're saying not necessarily.
That's right. What we really find is that people – first let me say that everybody makes bad choices. And for some of us, it results in homelessness. For others, we have support systems around us. Families, health insurance, good educations, and other things that kind of carry us along while we get out of those bad situations. Others become homeless. For those folks, actually getting them into housing is the most important thing that we can do in order to help them address the issues that they need to address. And it is very successful. We work very closely with Ability First, which is an agency that serves people with disabilities. They have a similar program that is very successful. So we know it works. The difficulty is that it's more expensive on the front end than, for instance, providing someone with food and a cot to sleep in. So it's a question of do we have the will to invest in someone in the front end so that long term they will not be homeless? Or should we invest funds in an immediate kind of emergency assistance kind of model? And our community needs both. And we need to look at the wisest use of our resources locally. And I would argue the wisest use of our resources is helping get people out of homelessness, and then they can make their own way.
There was a big push not too long ago. Well, when Southwood was being built, there was a requirement that a certain percentage of that subdivision be set aside as affordable housing. Are we still seeing that? Of course, the real estate market isn't doing so hot right now, but as new subdivisions come online, is that still kind of the way it is, or is that gone by the board?
That is there is a big initiative for affordable housing. Affordable housing, though, is typically pegged to what is called area median income. And the area median income in our community is about $50,000 a year. So those affordable housing initiatives tend not to provide housing to those with extremely low income, people who might make $20,000 a year or $15,000 a year.
You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM with Susan Porchot, the executive director of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition, 414-1234-800-926-8809, perspectives at WFSU.org. We'll be right back. The homeless situation continues to be just one of these seemingly insurmountable issues that we talk about and talk about and talk about, and still more and more folks find themselves in that situation due to any number of circumstances. So that's why we're talking to Susan Porchot here on Perspectives this morning for an update on what the Big Bend Homeless Coalition is finding, first off, in regards to some real hard-nosed numbers concerning the homeless circumstances in the capital city area, and also some of the things that may be working to counter some of that. Let's see. If Helen's ready there on line one, we can go to the phones. Hi, Helen. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hi. I saw some publicity, I think, in the newspaper about this Renaissance Community Center for the homeless. Could you maybe comment on that? I mean, how is that helping the homeless problem in our community?
Oh, thanks, Helen. What about the Renaissance Center? I saw that too, Susan. What's the deal with that?
Right. That's a brand new program that's being offered. The Renaissance Community Center is actually an initiative that was undertaken by some local business people in concert with social service agencies. So it is near the shelter on Tennessee Street. And what the intention there is that people who are in an emergency shelter or anyone who's homeless in our community can go there and find a variety of different services. For instance, they can talk to someone who can help them find different housing programs. They can talk to someone who can help them apply for disability. They can talk to someone who can help them look for jobs and so on. So the Renaissance Community Center is kind of a one-stop center, if you will, for helping people access the resources that are already in the community that they might not know about.
And it's when so much of what we do and so many of the services that we routinely avail ourselves of are only available online, and you don't have an internet connection, and mm-hmm. you don't have an iPhone, and you don't have all of those things that so many of us take for granted. It makes life additionally tough, doesn't it?
It does. And really, that's actually other services that are offered there is computer access, also phone privileges. There are also lockers and laundry facilities there. But I think it is important what you mentioned, Tom, that so many of the resources can only be accessed via computer. And that's one of the reasons that this Renaissance Community Center and Hope Community have gone to the system of having computers available for people to learn how to use them and to access the resources that they need.
Because take it from me as a former volunteer at the Leroy Collins Public Library, you will wait a long time to get onto mm-hmm. those, even though they have recently upgraded the number of terminals that they have available, mm-hmm. and now they even have, you know, the smaller portable computers that folks can have. Still, there's always a line waiting for those.
And, that's right.
And I know you can say, well, homeless people have all the time in the world, but really they don't. Their time is just as valuable as anybody else's. And perhaps even more so, because you make a mistake there, it may have more dire consequences than we would have, right?
Right. If you miss the job interview because you don't have a cell phone or a watch to keep track of time, then you might have missed that job and you won't be able to get employment then. So there are so many reasons why that access is important. And I would like to say kudos to the Leon County Libraries for providing so many resources to people who don't have access otherwise.
414-1234 for Perspectives. And Susan Porcio, Executive Director of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition. Let's head off to mighty Madison, Florida, where Danny awaits. Hi, Danny. Welcome to Perspectives.
Hey, good morning. I was wondering, like, if, say, Mitt Romney, if Republicans must get elected, if they say they're going to cut out all the wasted spending, you know, from Medicare, all that stuff, would that affect the homeless money from the federal government?
Well, let's see. We got Medicare would be for the health care for those 65 and older. Medicaid, of course, being the program, the health care program for low-income folks. And if there were any changes, say, in Medicaid or that sort of thing, some realignment of federal spending, mm-hmm. what impact might that have, Susan? Any idea?
Medicaid is a lifeline for many of the people that we serve. If without Medicaid, which provides some health care coverage or disability income for people who are homeless and disabled, that is maybe the only resources that they have. So reducing the size of Medicaid would actually cause more people to be homeless and to be homeless for longer. That it would really be devastating.
The perception, again, or perhaps a misperception, that we have a lot of folks on, quote, welfare. As I recall, under the President Clinton administration, he got together with Speaker Gingrich and they changed welfare as we know it. Aid to Family with Dependent Children is no longer there. We now have something called TANF.
Mm-hmm.
And in a state of 18 million people, I think we have, what, 117,000 households that are eligible for TANF right now. So it's not like all these folks are getting big welfare checks.
Oh, yeah. There's really TANF stands for Temporary Assistance to Needy Families. There are very few families these days who actually qualify for TANF. So one of the things that While one program that does help many of those we serve is the what used to be called food stamps. It's now called SNAP. That is something that helps our families and especially those with children to provide put food on the table. But the resources are so slim in terms of kind of a safety net for people who are very poor or homeless that any kind of cuts in social services or health care or disability assistance would really magnify the problem.
Back to the phones we go. Mary Ann here in Tallahassee. Hi, Mary Ann. Hey, Mary Ann.
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Sure can.
Okay, great. I had a question about the volunteer need, and I wondered what type of activities volunteers are needed for and if you had programs where students that are out for the summer might be able to volunteer.
No, I can see her shaking her head over here. Susan says, no, they don't need any help at all. what do you need, Susan?
My eyes are lighting up. Yes, we need volunteers virtually all the time, and I'll just give you some samples of the kinds of activities we have. One of the things we like to do at Hope Community is to have a kind of a celebration party at least once a month to celebrate the birthdays of the children that are staying at Hope Community and also any adults that, say, might have gotten their CNA license or might have gotten a job or any other celebratory event. So one thing that a family or a group of people could do is to host one of those parties. We also need help with things like serving, preparing and serving meals. At Hope Community, we provide in excess of 45,000 meals a year to our residents. And it's wonderful when a school group or a church group or a civic group comes in and brings the food to cook a wonderful meal and serves that meal to our residents. So that's called our MVP, Meal Volunteer Program. We also have other opportunities for individuals, like doing mock interviews with residents who are looking for jobs or reading to the children, all sorts of different things. I would suggest that anyone who's interested in volunteering visit our website. If it's okay, I will give that to you. It's bigbendhc.org. BIGBENDHC.org.
Hope that helps, Mary Ann, and thank you so much for thinking of the Homeless Coalition and the Hope Community when it comes to generosity there. Oh, and folks can also drop by and just see what goes on out there and maybe even check out that great garden, because I hear this weekend will be a wonderful time to visit the Hope Community Garden.
That's right. McClay Gardens' annual tour of gardens is on Saturday, and Hope Community is really honored to be one of the gardens chosen for that tour. thanks to the Tallahassee Garden Club, our campus is gorgeous. Volunteers, again, supporting our people who stay at Hope Community, have not only prepared beautiful gardens, it's a lovely campus, but also helped create a playground for the children at Hope Community. So Hope Community will be one of the stops on the tour of gardens on Saturday. Also, folks can drop by anytime during business hours for just a tour or to get additional information.
Back to the phones. Anne here in Tallahassee. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I just wanted to add to the conversation from a little while ago regarding resources and the homeless and unemployed with the library. Ever since...
Hello, Anne. Oh, well, just dropped the call. That's the only problem with those wireless devices. Sometimes you get in between cell towers and bloop, you kind of vanish there. Do you have availability of computer access at Hope Community for the residents, Susan?
Yes, we do have computers for the residents at Hope Community. One of the things that we could actually use more of are fairly new laptops. We have a wireless system that we've set up for residents to use if they have laptops. And so we are seeking donations of laptop-type computers for the residents to kind of check out in a kind of a library system. That way they can do, if they're in school at Lively or TCC, they can do their homework online. They can look for jobs. They can fill out employment applications, almost all of which are online these days. So the Hope Community residents rely on those a lot.
You mentioned earlier, again, that it just strikes me as being a phenomenal accomplishment that 80% of the folks who are residents of Hope Community leave chronic homelessness and go on to really get their lives mm-hmm. together on an independent type of basis. Do they leave after 6 months automatically, or do you kind of ease them through and have criteria they must meet before you kind of mm-hmm. push them out of the nest? Or?
It's very individualized because every person comes with their own story, their own set of barriers. Our average stay is actually closer to 4 months. So most people who come in kind of ready to do the work, if you will, are able to get jobs or income, address health issues, and move out in 4 to 5 months. Others might take somewhat longer because they might have more barriers or issues to work on or have a criminal record that makes it hard to get a job. As long as folks are making progress on their plan, they can stay even a little bit longer than 6 months. We have what's called a phase system. So folks in phase one are just kind of creating their plan that they're going to work on. In phase two, they are identifying job opportunities, interviewing for jobs. In phase three, they are finding that job. And in phase four, they are saving up money from their job so that when they are ready to move out, they'll have the funds available for rent deposits, utility deposits, and so on.
A medical metaphor springs to mind. This is like intensive care for homeless folks and families.
It is intensive, and it's relatively short term. I mean, 6 months is not long in the whole scheme of things, but that's the very thing that makes it work, is that it's intensive, it's short term, and it gives people a chance to become self-sufficient and really rely on their own strengths.
I want to get your ideas, too, on some more of those front-end types of services, such as Leon County contemplating a mental health court and, mm-hmm. and the drug court and all of those interventions that maybe can intercept some of these folks before they really kind of crash and burn and come up with that criminal record that can further cripple their ability mm-hmm. to deal with society.
Right. Mental health court is a great example of an intervention that would particularly help people who are homeless. Many people who are homeless, especially if they're not in a program like Hope Community, might be arrested for just loitering or you know, getting into traffic or a variety of fairly minor transgressions. If they then – if they have a mental health problem and they end up in jail, they'll stay in jail for a little while and then they'll be released and then they'll have a recurrence of the same kind of problem. So they'll be in and out of jail. I've heard varying estimates of what a jail, you know, stay costs, but let's say $40,000 a year. That's $40,000 that could easily be spent in a different way to redirect that person to mental health services and end their kind of recurring visits to the jail and give them some support they need.
Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, you can't throw everything on Appalachian Mental Health Services because they already have a huge clientele list right now. So don't we need some more of those kinds of things so that when these folks are assigned to mental health counseling mm-hmm. instead of a jail, at least they'll have an ability to get that?
Yeah, we need just vastly more mental health services for people who don't have the ability to pay. And that is something that our community will need to address in the short run because so many of the mental health programs that we have are already above capacity and are focused more on people who have the ability to pay.
Well, it sounds like that would be a good time to kind of plug the upcoming budget deliberations on the part of city and county, even though staff has made their recommendations. It's not locked in yet. And there's still some discussion going on as to how the dollars, shrinking though they may be, might be allocated better within the context of the needs that we have in this community. And it sounds like you got a lot of needs, Susan.
There are a lot of needs across the community in so many different areas. And as a former business person myself, one thing that I would look at if I were a commissioner would be, where can I get the most benefit from these dollars? And to cut dollars from homeless services right now will actually cost more money in the long run.
Susan Porchot, thank you so much for coming on. All the best to you and the folks at Big Bend Homeless Coalition and the Hope community as well.
Thank you.
Hope you win a big prize from the garden thing this weekend.
Thank you, Tom. It was great being here.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance provided by Ken Smith this morning. Ryan Bank was handling the phones and emails, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again next week. More expert opinion and your input right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.